Welcome to Future Makers, cutting-edge debates on our changing society with leading researchers at the University of Oxford, recorded here in the Thomas Hobbes Room at Hertford College. I'm Peter Millikan, Professor of Philosophy, and Series 1 is all about artificial intelligence. AI is already having a significant impact on the finance sector, from fraud detection to algorithmic trading to customer service. Many within the industry believe this impact could grow rapidly over the next few years and even fundamentally transform the sector. So what does this mean for the place of banking and finance within society and for the people that work in it? With me to discuss this topic are Steve Roberts, Professor of Machine Learning, Nir Vulkan, Associate Professor of Business Economics, and Yanis Klaas, who's recently written a book on machine learning for finance. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Steve, do you want to kick us off on this one? When did AI start to play a notable role in the finance and banking sector?
I would argue that under many modern definitions of AI, the finance sector started using intelligent algorithms to perform its tasks several decades ago. At the beginning, these were extensions of traditional computational statistics and stochastic mathematics, which is a mainstay and foundation of so much in finance. Much of this was computerized, replacing the guesswork, some of it in the early days of programmable calculators even, for things like option pricing and beyond. But there was a real revolution that took place around about the turn of the millennium. And to really understand that, I think we need to put in context where modern AI sits. Most of the techniques that form the backbone of modern artificial intelligence and machine learning that really have impact in industry and commerce have their roots in algorithms that were known about 20 years ago. What has changed dramatically, though, especially in the last two decades, is the fact that we have exponentially more data and computing power is so much more. That means we have a huge data reservoir with which to train algorithms to tease out the subtle patterns in data, which are absolutely at a scale beyond human. And this is really the state of the art right now.
And is this changing quickly or do you feel it's plateauing?
In finance, it very much depends on where we think about the application. At the very lowest level, say for something such as ultra high frequency trading, something which I've had the pleasure or displeasure of being involved with for many years, I would argue that many of the techniques that actually learn from data and run those algorithms at ultra high speed are relatively simple models that would have been understood by somebody 30 years ago. They are more at the end of AI, which we would regard as computational statistics, rather than general purpose learning algorithms. As we distill up from this very, very fine timescale, and I mean where trades take place many thousands of times per second, you begin to get AI used much more in an understandable way, where you accumulate a vast amount of data and you're trying to make maybe a forecast or understand your risk exposure to taking trades over hours, days, weeks, months, and possibly even over years. That's a technology which is about getting it right more often than not, whereas I'd say the very high frequency trading technology is just about being extremely fast. So an accurate model that's slow is useless at one extreme in finance, but an accurate model is incredibly important at the other extreme.
So we've got quite a lot of different strands here, right? We've got some algorithms that have been around a long time, but now we've got the technology to use them in ways that we couldn't before. And we've got some areas where new techniques are being developed to do different things at different speeds. Where do you think they're currently having the most impact?
I'd say two areas in common with the role of AI in much of society. AI is having a huge impact in displacing human activity. Often in the finance sector, that would maybe be back office, so more like sales, some of the sort of daily pricing and so on. But it's also about acting as an extra conduit of knowledge to help finance professionals make better judgment. By that I mean the data is at such scale, individual human beings, no matter how smart they are, simply cannot use that data because it is so vast. So they use algorithms to distill some insight from it and use that insight along with their own deep understanding of financial markets to help them make better decisions, to hedge risk, and to make the right calls in terms of the assets that they're trading. And I think it's this aspect where AI is augmenting the human capability. It's acting as an extra conduit of knowledge to help professionals make the right decisions in a quicker time. That's really very, very big area. It's also opening up potentially new products and new trade opportunities. So as we can imagine a world where algorithms can and are beginning to ingest huge tracts of information, not just in the financial sphere, but outside of it, believing that there might be weak relationships between the sentiment on social media in a country and what is being traded potentially as maybe one of that country's exports. There are known relationships between these. So finance houses are extending their remit of data acquisition to include the weird, wild, and wonderful, not just price series, which would have been the mainstay of finance a few decades ago. Algorithms are extremely good at teasing out the patterns and correlations in these very large, unstructured, disparate data sets, and then proposing potential trade options to people who can implement them live into the markets. And I think that that's a discovery and almost a trade creation opportunity that we've only seen the tip of the iceberg of.
Nia, you're an expert in e-commerce. Tell me how things are looking from your perspective.
Well, I've also been involved with algorithmic trading. So in that sense, Steve and I have a lot in common. And I agree with Steve that this has been around for a long time, since the 80s. Interestingly, in the 80s, sometimes programs were used, computer programs, AI programs, algorithms were used, not because they were faster necessarily, but because they wanted to take out the emotions out of trading. And so there was a way of disciplining yourself by replacing yourself with a set of rules. And that was a certain philosophy that certain funds use. Also agree with Steve that there's been a big change recently. I would emphasize that there's two sort of reasons behind it. One, which is all of e-commerce and particularly with fintech recently, is the change in the attitude of the regulator, the FCA. And this is after the financial crisis in 2007, where the government told the regulator, well, your job is still to protect little old ladies, but also to make the city of London, competitive. And the regulators interpreted that as a license to work with all kind of weird and wonderful startups and to allow different kinds of transactions. And a lot of the AI that we see experimenting in areas that the banks didn't touch before. So we're seeing, for example, peer-to-peer lending. We're seeing companies like Funding Circle, which is two Oxford graduates started it, extremely successful, which is all based on algorithms and how your money is invested. And they're doing really, really well. The other thing that helped is, like Steve said earlier, is the computational power and the availability of data we didn't have before. I think that actually changed the way AI is done. So if you look particularly at things like natural language processing, this chatbots that you have now. Before 10 years ago, the AI community tried to build models of how humans speak. They had all kind of cognition and understanding of words. All that's gone away now, and they're just using the vast data. So when you start asking a question, really what the bot is doing is saying, well, people who ask that normally, that's what they're looking for. A little bit like the Google search is working. And that's proved very, very efficient. And so, and the more data you have to train those networks, those bots, the more efficient it is. So I think this is a key feature behind the reason why we're seeing a lot more AI in areas we didn't see before.
Steve emphasized that in some areas, having artificial intelligence that can analyze huge amounts of data can then be used to inform the decisions of a human expert so that the human applies their deeper understanding of what's going on, informed by all that data analysis. You've pointed out that actually there are cases where the human goes wrong because he's too human. I mean, emotions come into it. Can you foresee that ultimately the artificial intelligences are going to replace humans entirely in many areas where currently you need a human expert to make the decision?
Yeah, well, I don't know about replacing human entirely, but I think maybe to put a positive spin on it, is AI can be used to help us deal with all kind of biases that we have in our decision making. And I'm seeing a lot of startups in this space where they're using algorithms to look at, let's say, mine or yours data and the way we transact and say, well, you can do better or you can improve that. And then they're communicating to you and sending you messages. It can be used to make you make better decisions and to help you use the resources you have better to achieve some goals. Like Steve said, I think replaces some of the more manual things we've been seeing in banks. Possibly that's not a bad thing, that we're seeing algorithms that are able to do that much better than most people do.
Presumably sometimes algorithms are replacing very routine tasks that humans do, tasks that involve simple collection of a lot of information, perhaps comparison. I mean, yeah, we're all used to using comparison websites. Sometimes they're being used to do things that we think of as requiring much more careful judgment. To what extent do you think we're going to progressively see them taking over that role?
Algorithms works best when you have a lot of data that need analyzing that you don't have time to do. So actually, algorithms do, or AI does best things that we thought are really complicated, like flying airplanes or doing brain surgery. Where AI struggles is with simple things, yeah, like speaking, making conversation, understanding what you're searching for and what you're looking for. So at the human level, at the individual level and the customer level, ultimately, this thing would still be used as an assistant to help, try and help you understand what your goals are.
And there's quite an irony there, isn't there? We tend to think of some things like arithmetic, yeah, as being quite difficult, yeah, when actually they're pretty trivial computationally, whereas things that we've evolved to do, like recognizing objects, yeah, tracking moving things, you know, throwing balls and catching them, that sort of thing, that's computationally far more complicated.
Right,
it's
yeah,
just that we've evolved to do that. But you see quite a complementary role.
Well, I think that's good AI. Good AI used in that sense.
Yeah.
I mean, like any technology, ultimately it's the way it's been used that's good. I mean, we might get later on to some of the more things we're seeing, what people do with the data. I mean, we've seen a little bit of that I don't know if it's exactly financial, but in the insurance industry, where they were using your Facebook data to try and deduce all kinds of things about you, and in particular they were trying to deduce what kind of personality you have. They kind of stopped that now because of that scandal, the Cambridge Analytica scandal, but they were quite good at deducing from your social media profile what kind of personality you have. And then what do you do with that? Well, it turns out that people who are conscientious are much less likely to make claim on the car insurance, on the home insurance. And so you offer them better rates.
Yes, yes.
But perhaps you offer others worse rate. Well, is this a good or bad thing to do? I think that's really for us to decide as a society. But personally, I think that would be bad to allow the algorithms to completely.
Yeah, I think we'll be coming back to that sort of issue, which is obviously very big and difficult and potentially controversial. Yanis, I'd like to move on to you a bit. You've done teaching of financial computing. And one of the aspects of this that's quite interesting is people who are coming into the industry, presumably they need to be thinking about this in a very different way from previous generations. They need to be educated differently. They need to understand new systems and so forth. Do you see a lot of change there?
Yeah, definitely. Financial employers have a shifting focus. So they want to see much more data science skills, analysis in Python and all these kinds of things. And we saw that a classic financial education, maybe you study econometrics or something, does not necessarily prepare you for that, because this shift has caught many educational institutions a little bit off guard. They're not quick enough to adjust their curriculums. Also, what happens is that many financial theories and many standard works were developed in a slightly different time. Often you see that they assume kind of a speed of interaction with customers and the markets, which are much slower than they are today. They assume certain environmental parameters like globalization and impacts of different markets, how quick things propagate through the financial system, to be at wrong time scales. So that is just an adjustment that many educational institutions need to make, and which we hope to give our students too.
One issue here is that you are looking at people being trained to a very high level there. I mean, what most people would think of as quite difficult technical stuff. They're having to learn to do data analysis, to run machine learning algorithms, which means setting those up appropriately and all the rest. This is only ever going to be suitable for a relatively small number of people, whereas currently the finance industry employs hundreds of thousands. Does that mean that you've now got far fewer people taking roles that are far more significant?
I generally think that as there's more machine learning and more big data analysis and all these kinds of things being employed in the finance industry, the productivity of the average employee goes up, but the skill level also kind of rises. The financial industry is not a blue-collar employer. People already have a larger education. I think that will even increase. You will want to have people a deep understanding of what's going on. But on the other hand, their productivity will also increase. So it will be less people doing more work.
And presumably, one assumes that in the finance industry, the salaries for this are pretty good. So I guess this is attracting an international market, right, of young people coming into it.
Definitely. And also on the side of the financial institutions, there's such a struggle to get the right talent that many are willing to go very different ways. For example, companies like Quantopian are trying to completely crowdsource the development of trade algorithms simply because it's hard to find enough talented people who could write these. Or there's companies like WorldQuant who are kind of letting people remotely do in a kind of consulting arrangement, write these algorithms rather than a classical employment contract. So they are looking wider and casting a wider net too. So it's definitely becoming much more global.
This is seriously disruptive in terms of the traditional financial industries, right? You've got different people doing different kinds of jobs in a very different context. All three of you, I'm interested to hear what you think at the moment is having the biggest impact amongst all the changes in the finance industries.
I think there are some areas where AI data analytics is having an enormous impact. And I think I would characterize that by using a phrase used in finance, which is this search for alternative alpha. It's about looking at the weird and wonderful, looking everything from satellite images of how many cars are in a car park of a major tech company, so that you can take a position on whether they're going to release a new product or not, and so on. These are all very, very smart areas of gathering knowledge. I would counter that by also saying the other main area is about how you hedge and create a small risk envelope whilst retaining maximum rewards. And finance is fundamentally about one of two things: either handling risk, taking it on and handling it better than others, or having a temporary monopoly on information over and above competitors. So everybody knows it, it's useless, you can't really use it. And I think the alternative alpha, searching for new and interesting ways to create indicators that might tell you a little bit about where markets are going, that's a really big area. The other area, which I believe is equally transformational, is in reducing the losses by making much more risk mitigating models. I'm reminded when I first started writing algorithms in finance, which was in the early 2000s, much of the work that was being done in an area like foreign exchange was being done on an exchange rate by exchange rate basis. So you'd have somebody who was specialized at writing code and doing trading between, say, the pound and the dollar. Somebody else who'd be looking at the Scandinavian crown currencies against the dollar or the Deutschmark or whatever that might be. The big revolution that took place is to get rid of individuals and to note that the relationships between data sources are as valuable information sources as the information within each one individually. Furthermore, by understanding the capricious interlocking of these disparate pieces of information, you get a much better understanding about your true risk exposure. And AI is accelerating that process absolutely enormously. So a very positive sense, people in the finance industry are able to take decisions with better knowledge of the risk exposure associated with those decisions. I think that's a very positive thing.
a slightly different angle is if we think of actually what finance is, at the core of finance is what we call risk. So it's all about pricing of risk, thinking of risk, analyzing risk. And risk is often, in many instances in finance, actually asymmetric information. So for example, when I go to the bank and I ask for money to start my business or to borrow money to buy a car or to buy anything, then I know whether I will pay it back. Well, with large certainty, I know that I intend to pay it back, that I have a good job, that I'm doing and so on, but the bank doesn't. And so the bank sees it as some kind of risk, and it has some models to try and figure out what the risk is. And then they price the loan that they give me based on that risk, which means young people get bad rates, which means people who are new in the country get bad rates and so on. What to me is fascinating is if we can use AI, and I know a lot of people are doing that, to better risk people. So people don't just fall into these categories I just said. Can we look at this relatively young person, but we know a lot about him or her through the data that he or she made available. And then we can say, actually, they're a safe person, so we can offer them a much better rate. So these are the kind of things I think that are really, really exciting. So if we can use the data and we can use smart algorithms, because the data is vast, it's going to be very, very difficult for a person to do that, to build models of people, then we can create new opportunities around borrowing, lending, measuring risk. And that comes to the core of what finance is. So we can, to some extent, extend finance and make it available for more people at better terms.
This is already happening to a significant extent.
So it's happening in the margin. So we're seeing, so I mentioned earlier Funding Circle, and then there are companies like that. There's a company called Protégé that many of our students might be familiar with, Protégé Finance, because it has started by a rival university, but two of the major investors were from Oxford, so we could claim it. Protégé provide funding for example, someone from India who wants to come to Oxford to do a postgraduate degree. And they do that through sourcing money from the crowd, by putting together a lot of applicants together, but simply by thinking creatively about the risk associated with these people paying back. And by looking at all kind of network effects, so you think, well, I'm less likely to, you know, not pay back to a bunch of people from the university I'm going for, and so on. And I think that's, and they use a lot of data and new type of algorithms to come up with the decisions how to do that. And these are people that no bank would touch before, or the banks that would give them loans will take such huge returns to compensate for the risk being we don't know anything about these people and they're going to live in a different country. So that's, wow, that's really, really risky, and the existing models that the banks have. And so they've been kind of left out. So I think we're definitely seeing that in the UK at the moment, if you look at startups or scale-ups, so small companies, a lot of them are getting funding from startup, from new type of financial or fintech type companies, many of them using algorithms at its core to make their lending decisions.
That's interesting. Okay, so there we see something that's really helping people, because the algorithms can do the kind of detailed analysis which a person yes. wouldn't have time for, and therefore it becomes worth lending money to yes. small businesses that are promising, but nobody would have been able to tell that
that's
in the
right.
past.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yanis?
Well, left and right, Stephen, you already got the good points. Risk and alpha is definitely huge trends. One that I would add is just how these financial institutions operate day to day. So if you say you have a loan, who do you even target the loan at to? These kinds of things, because these companies start more and more operating like an e-commerce business, more or less. So just the operational side is a big one too.
Well, things like increasingly interacting over the internet, using chatbots and so forth, rather than interacting with people.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays you interface with your bank primarily through an app, right? And you barely ever go to the branch. And back in the day, you would still go to the branch. There was someone, a teller at the branch, who would actually know you, who would know all your transactions, and then would tell you, hey, why don't you think about buying a house, or why don't you get a mortgage? And these things now come from data. Now, like, because you're only in the app, there's no teller knowing you anymore. They kind of have to send you an email at some day, like, do you want to have a mortgage? And that now happens from the data.
Yeah, okay. So I'd like to move to what we see happening over the next 10 or 20 years. Now, I take it on that last point, that's just going to continue in the same way, isn't it? Except that a higher and higher proportion of us are going to be interacting, as you say, with an app. But when we talk about some of the other aspects of AI in finance, I expect things are much less predictable, right? So could we focus, first of all, on the issue of risk in investment and trading? Both Steve and Nir have been focusing on how AI can give us better decisions by taking advantage of huge amounts of data. Does this mean that in 10 years' time, we might have a trading environment that is entirely dominated by AI? And if so, what are the benefits and potential risks of that?
So I'd argue in some areas of finance, marketplaces and trades are already dominated and have been for some time by algorithms. Those algorithms may be simple, but they're orchestrated increasingly by intelligent algorithms, AI systems. This has some advantages. It brings liquidity and efficiency into markets, and there's many good things to like about that. But there are some bad things. And those bad things, in some ways, go back to the rapidity with which computation can take place, which we've argued is a very positive thing and has led the way to huge advances. But it can also lead to catastrophic changes in prices, in trading systems, in vanishingly short timeframes. These timeframes are so small that human intervention, and there tends to be human intervention, a big red panic button, by the time someone's hit the panic button, a lot of damage will have taken place. Of course, we're all familiar with various flash crashes that take place, are induced at least in part by ultra-high frequency algorithms. The other area, and I'm becoming a little more dystopic at this point, AI consists of models, ways in which you learn from data using those models, inference or the mathematics of optimization and inference. But crucially, we forget those models contain within them a ghostly image of the data on which they were trained. If events occur which are outside of the space of data on which the algorithm was trained, it will at best say, I don't know, and at worst, confidently tell you something completely erroneous because it's guessing with no evidence whatsoever. This means although modern AI is extraordinarily good at improving the performance of many things, financial trading included, in 99.9% of the distribution of events that occur, it's those tail events, those one in a thousand events, which AI algorithms often fail catastrophically with. And these are dangerous algorithms to have unless we know about how they fail. Would I want to fly in an aircraft whose system was trained on a modern AI algorithm rather than using the principles of formal verification that have come from 150 years of control engineering? Absolutely, I would not. And until we understand how algorithms cope with the unusual events and how they fail, and make sure that that failure is graceful and understood, and those algorithms are accountable, we will not see such heavy penetration of AI in sectors such as the financial institutions.
You mentioned the one in a thousand events, and it's well known that sometimes statistical analysis of risk has turned out to be completely wrong because systems are chaotic where previously they were assumed not to be. And suddenly it turns out that the one in a thousand flood happens every 100 years or something like that. Now, I take it in finance, this is likely to be true with knobs on. I mean, you contrast the case of the aircraft, where we have, we think, pretty well-established science, we can do experiments, we can use wind tunnels, we can get repeatable data, we can have solid science, which gives us confidence that we understand how the plane is staying aloft. In finance, we don't have anything comparable to that. We've got economic models that are pretty crude, that until recently made almost no allowance for human factors or chaotic phenomena that seemed to assume that we would always go towards equilibrium and so forth, whereas it looks like bubbles and crashes are absolutely part of the system. Do you see our theory of these things evolving over time towards what we have in the case of aerodynamics, or is that just an impossibility?
I personally think finance is made extraordinarily difficult by the fact that it is arguably the ultimate non-repeating system. What happened in the last minute in a financial market, I'm not going to see again. You never dip your toe in the same data twice. That means models that were wonderful profit-making, risk-mitigating models yesterday have no guarantees of performing well in any way and may catastrophically fail today. That's rather different from, say, using AI to understand me speaking to my phone or identify objects in a picture. Arguably, those objects, a cat will still be a cat in a picture tomorrow. The rules of the game are constant in so many areas in which AI has had very impressive input, but are constantly changing in the financial sector. So I personally believe that for that reason alone, let alone the complexity of global interconnections between all these algorithms that we simply don't understand, these as, if you like, intelligent multi-agent systems with millions of algorithms all firing off one another, we don't really understand the emergent dynamics, the stabilities, the risks and contagions and so on of such a complex system. We don't even have theories really to get our heads around what might happen. So I think there is a cautious optimism, but it's right for people within the sector to take things slowly until they have a more profound understanding of what happens in the tails, failure modes, propagation of risk and contagion and the like.
I think we're talking really about, I think maybe it'd be useful for our listeners, we're talking about two things. We're talking about trading and AI in trading, and maybe everything else in finance, things like lending and borrowing and so on. I agree with Steve about the risks associated with trading algorithms and high frequency in particular. I mean, what I say to that is we do have basic model of portfolio management and risk control, and good AI should have that. So the algorithms that I've seen that crashed or that really behave really badly just didn't think of that. They were good at the maths bit of identifying patterns and charging when they see patterns. And that's fine. But what happened if the pattern dramatically changed, like Steve said, something completely different occurred, and then they can go all crazy. If the algorithms, and that's what most of the sort of more sensible firms, I think, do have in them built in some kind of risk management tools, things that look at your value at risk, things like VAR and so on, kind of standard finance, really, standard portfolio theory finance. If you build that into them, that gives you some level of control within the algorithm already. That controls the level of risk that you have. And I think regulators like it as well. And we now increasingly we have more regulators, the FCA, get involved with algorithmic trading. And then until maybe a few years ago, they didn't, because they said, oh, that's what hedge funds do. And hedge funds is rich people's money. So let them do whatever they want with their money. We don't care. They now do care. They realize this have impact on the market. So they do look at that. And I think it's correct that they look at that. So if you look at algorithms, you don't need to necessarily know what's sort of how exactly what works in the box to regulate it. What you want to know is that it has some risk parameters. So if the model, in other words, sees something very different and start making a lot of money or losing a lot of money, the risk profile of that somehow is regulated, or at least it goes to a human being if it doesn't have it built in, that they can look at that. So I think this is the way, this is the only way really I can think of to try and control bad AI, if you like, within the trading environment.
Could I push a little bit on that? Yeah. When trading is going on, I take it that there are at least two different things here. And one is that you may look at a company to decide whether to buy shares in it, mm-hmm. and you look at the fundamentals. You see what its performance is like, what its cash flow, and you know how much it's selling, and all the rest. But the other thing you do is you look at momentum in the market. The fact is, I take it, that a trader who paid no attention to momentum in the market simply would not do very well. Mm-hmm. And that in practice, to make a lot of money out of trading, often what you do is follow the pattern of what others are doing. You ride on their tails and, you know, the thing rises and then it's knowing when to sell. When you sell, what you're doing is you're not making a judgment about the fundamentals of the company. You're making a judgment about when you think the market will turn. And if that's not based on objective data about the company, it's based on how the market as a whole is behaving. This makes things extremely difficult. I mean, it's not clear. If you do machine learning, yeah. what you're learning is about the behavior of the market in its current situation with the algorithms that are currently out there.
This is getting a bit maths, but when you said first, when you trade on fundamentals, you still only trade when you see some kind of opportunity. In other words, you think you see something that the market haven't seen yet, because the market isn't correctly pricing, I think that's what you said, based on the fundamentals. So you buy it or you sell it until the market corrects itself, and then you made your profit. And so similarly with momentum, you think that there is some kind of inertia in the market now and you're going to take advantage of it. I think to take advantage, anyway, you need to see some kind of patterns, and the patterns kind of translate to something inefficient in the market or some kind of irrationality in the market.
Well, hang on, irrationality. I mean, we're talking about an area here where nobody has perfect information. Yes. What could be more rational than making a decision based on how you see the market moving? Yes. None of us knows all the details of what's going on in some company, but we can be more confident, yes. arguably, that the market is moving in a particular direction than we can about what the fundamentals are worth. So what I'm suggesting is, actually, in a perfectly efficient market where everybody knows everything, nobody makes anything out of trading, right?
That's right. That's correct, yeah.
So making money out of trading depends on
That's right.
things not being known.
That's right, yeah. Or what we call or certain patterns in the market. But, I mean, those do exist. I mean, the science of behavioral finance,
yep.
I think there's largest numbers of Nobel Prizes in the last 10 years went to behavioral finance people from Kahneman onwards, is exactly for recognizing that. So I think as a profession, as a finance profession, then interesting to see your experience now as someone who's starting a finance course, how much we teach that, because it clearly is, I think, key to understand that markets are not always efficient, and that's what creates these opportunities.
And it's not actually in the interest of those who are doing financial trading with algorithms, right? It's not in their interest to have a completely efficient market in which yeah. all the information is known, right?
Yeah, we always say the market wants to be in equilibrium. The traders don't want to be in equilibrium. So, yeah.
So I'm wondering where this leads in 10 years, 20 years' time.
Yeah. Janus. I mean, if you're asking if AI is going to take over finance, you got to also ask what it's competing with. And humans are not really good at finance. Like the way we're wired, Steve just mentioned that markets are non-repeating, but humans always expect things to repeat because the physical world repeats. Just imagine you've been drinking water for all your life and it's been perfectly fine. And one day you drink it and it's poison. You wouldn't, but that's happening in the market. So humans are not made for that. And the algorithms, sadly, are also not really good at that.
Not yet, maybe.
Not yet. But at least with the algorithms, we have a chance of probing them mathematically, of feeding them slightly different data, of really seeing on what they react. So we have a better chance of debugging models than debugging humans. So I'm personally a little bit more optimistic on whether we're going to get better markets out of the AI. I think there's a positive trend there.
Okay. When you say you're optimistic because these algorithms are going to get better, let's just ask what they're going to get better at. Because if actually what they get better at is making money for the relatively small number of people who own them and taking money away from everybody else, that's not great.
No, but that's also not entirely new. So, like, throughout history, we had all these systems which were awesome for making money to the people that owned them, beginning at machinery and the Industrial Revolution. Then we kind of had to adjust our social system to kind of steer money to the people that did not own all these machinery to adjust the social balance a little bit. I think it's kind of the same with the algorithms, or it doesn't really even matter if you do own an algorithm to make money or if you employ a smart human and have a proprietary data source to make the money. In the end, the social adjustment has to be usually done by a government process, I think. You cannot really blame the algorithm for not doing that.
To add to that, that, I mean, one of the things we're seeing now, because we keep talking about algorithm within trading, actually we're seeing some of it moving down from the hedge funds to people like you and me now. So we're seeing companies like Money Farm and so on, where you have this little bit of algorithms and automated investment, automating investing for people with relatively small amount of investment. So I think that is kind of to what you said earlier, that actually brings this technology, this AI technology, or some of it, to people who were before couldn't use it. Because really, before that, it's only very wealthy people or through pension fund who invested in the hedge funds that employed the algorithms because the costs were too high. So we're seeing some of it is moving down the chain, so to speak, or because it's cheaper to build these algorithms and so on. And I think that's possibly a good thing. It also, I think it brings a level of sophistication, and I hope, I don't know if it will, that is also increase the level of engagement. One of the things that struck me is I see, for example, with my wife, who's a dentist, and with many other intelligent people who just really afraid of finance, don't want to touch it. And it's come to, and they make very rudimental decisions when it comes to things like pensions or investment. And I think a lot of people are like that. And I think if we can use some of this technology to help you engage, because it uses a language that you are more familiar with, and it kind of uses the data on you to try and help you with that, I think that could be a really, really positive thing.
We think of the internet as a resource of near unlimited data, not necessarily near unlimited information or knowledge, because it is a repository of all the good and the bad and the mumblings of all the people in the world. What we really need is a democratization of insight and rational inquiry at internet scale. So we have access to the data, but not everybody is able to distill that data into an argument or into a decision-making process where which they can make decisions either in finance or anything else. I think that's a good thing, because what we are faced with now is there is so much out there that we as individuals, unless we constrict what we look at in the world around us to a small, narrow bubble, we're overwhelmed with information. The danger of a small, narrow bubble is we become biased and focused towards looking at things that we want to see. And I think this is a separate issue outside of finance. But as a society, as the internet and us, having parts sort of co-evolve, but we haven't got the data analytic skills as people to really make sense of this wealth of information. So I think outside of finance, democratizing AI, having platforms where ordinary people can really understand the facts from the fiction and make informed, better decisions about their lives, in particular, maybe their finances and beyond, is only a good thing. And AI can provide some of those answers.
There's a serious challenge there, isn't there? I mean, and this comes back to issues that Nir was raising earlier about big data and privacy and so forth. There is, and particularly in the area of finance, there are actors out there that may have a very strong motivation for warping my perception of what's in my financial interest, because that way, you know, they're going to get hold of some of my money. And we've seen in the political world plenty of distortion of people's views, plenty of people out there who are deliberately trying to do that. So how do you see this democratization working in a way that's going to ensure against those sorts of risks?
So when we encounter people who try and manipulate us to take a particular decision, it's more often than not because we don't have access to the information which has come directly from the data. And we believe, because they may be in a position of authority or they appear to be authoritative, we believe their account of some derived measure from the data. Oh, you must take out this insurance policy with us, otherwise your finances will slide even more. If we are able to look at the raw data and have the tools to perform our own analysis using some AI tools on our own data, we can come to our own opinions. It may be correct what we've been told, but it may be absolutely wrong. So I have hopes that most people, when given information rather than just data, and that information is rationally and factfully derived from that data, they make good decisions. And that is all that we can hope for. But I think AI can help make, give, provide people information so that they can make better decisions about their personal finances. And I believe that will have a trickle up as part of the revolution in the financial sector.
I think that's exactly right, especially as Nia mentioned earlier, there's this great opportunity of pricing people's personal risks better and giving the better finance. But at the same time, these people should understand why they're giving this particular rate. And there's a lot of legal non-discrimination issues at stake as well. I think that from a technical perspective, interpretability of models is a huge topic, because essentially when you go to a bank, you get want to have a loan and they say your rate is 4%, you should be able to ask why. And then they should give you back the model and they should give you all this information that you need to understand why your rate is 4% and someone else's rate is 5% and all these kind of things.
But we're talking here about an area where it would seem to me the interests of the different actors are significantly in harmony, right? I don't want to be taking on a loan that I can't afford to maintain, and the bank doesn't want me to do that either. So getting good information on my actual financial situation and the relevant risks is in the interests of both parties. There's an optimistic message coming from all three of you with regard to that kind of thing, and to some extent this democratization of expertise. Going back to the issue of trading, I take it that quite often it's a very different kind of game and it's more like a zero-sum game. That is, what one person wins, another person loses. In that case, where you've got essentially a competitive environment, the odds are always going to be in favour of those people with the fastest machines, the quickest connection to the financial markets, the best algorithms, etc. Are we looking at a different story there?
Maybe.
Some hesitation there amongst all three of you.
I don't think we're looking at a different story at all. Financial institutions that have had the expertise, the data feeds, and the computing resources, along with hiring smart people to write algorithms, have historically always done better than those who haven't. I don't think that that is going to disappear in any way whatsoever. If we do have off-the-shelf, excellent third-party open source AI code, you know, many people around the world, both in academic and commercial institutes, are trying to put together, it lowers the barriers to entry. And it does mean that these machine learning and AI skills can come into companies through excellent open source third-party software packages, rather than through the hiring of the elite, of which there are a finite number. So there is some hope, but the history of finance shows the moment something starts happening, the moment the sea level starts changing, there is an arms race. And it is all about, if everybody has access to this, then I don't continue to be profitable as I was when I had something special. Therefore, there is motivation for me to build something that is on top of or smarter or bigger or better or faster. And that is simply not going to go away. So we are by the nature of finance, we are going to lock ourselves into a perpetual technological arms race.
Is it an arms race in which the difference between the big winners and the medium winners might get larger and larger. In any such arms race, you're going to get different levels of success. It's a very different landscape if those who are highly successful are getting 10 times as much profit as those who are in the middle from if they're getting 1,000 times the profit of those in the middle.
There's some evidence that that is exactly what's happening. And certainly from a technological perspective, access to global scale computational power, which many of the big shops have got, is the recipe to get your nose ahead. And not everybody can afford to be burning $1 million or more a year just on compute power. And that's a pretty conservative estimate as well. So yes, this is nothing new though. I mean, this has been taking place since people bought faster horses to get information across the city quicker, right the way through to automating everything and co-locating with the exchanges. So I think these technological evolutions have been endemic to finance. They are part of it and they will not cease to be part of it.
One interesting addition to that might be that there's a security risk because most people are trading on the same data. So there's a lot of data which is being used by basically everybody. There's only so many data vendors. And there's a real risk that that data is wrong, which would lead to a catastrophic outcome potentially. So if you were a motivated actor, it would just be a mistake and you would go and fake some of the Morningstar data. A lot of algorithms would start doing some really crazy things, and that could be potentially very dangerous and very harmful. And many of the big shops, big hedge funds are aware of this risk and trying to get really down to how can we prove that this data is true. That's really hard to do because you don't know if the price really moved or if it's wrong. So there's definitely kind of a more systematic risk coming into that.
Yeah, just to maybe generalize it even further, the question is it easier to manipulate for someone who is malicious, yes, and trying to manipulate the data to create a bubble or to create something to benefit from that? Is it easier now to do with algorithms as opposed to with human traders? And I'm not sure if it is, but there is definitely a risk associated with that.
And what do all of you see as sensible moves on the part of governments or others to mitigate this and other risks moving forward?
I think Steve said earlier, first of all, is the ability of, it's important that customers have access to the algorithms that make decisions on their behalf. I think this is crucial. Otherwise, we're moving into a world where it's two classes, those who know Python and those who don't. And that is.
But actually with machine learning algorithms, very often what they do is completely inscrutable even to the people who are running them, right?
It's not impossible to require that the company can provide the basic reason why you got this score. So it's, I mean, these algorithms can be, and you can require that they do that. So the people have the chance to act on that and to improve and not to fall into some kind of black hole where they're blacklisted and they can't do anything with that. So I think this is definitely an area that the regulator can be involved in. At the moment we are, and I think I said it earlier, in an environment where there is less regulation and a lot of innovation. And mostly, as we said, around early stage financing again. So it's not in the main banking area, but it's getting more and more popular. I think it's a good stage, but I think it will have to be followed up by a stage of the regulator sort of taking stock and re-evaluating. And I think they do that. I mean, I certainly have been in meetings where they invite experts and they try and understand what the new risks are and how they can try and possibly regulate against those.
Yeah, and often this depends on world events, doesn't it? A big crash happens and suddenly everyone says we need to regulate to stop this happening again. You were talking earlier, Steve, about accountability. Do you see that as playing a role? I mean, holding institutions to account when things go wrong?
There needs to be some kind of compliance and policy around financial trading. By and large, whether weak or strong, there are different levels of compliance that companies have got to adhere to, and those change around the world, but by and large those are in place. I was more concerned about, and it's something that was brought up on a couple of occasions, where algorithms make decisions about individuals. Say they say, no, we can't give you a credit card, or no, we can't give you an overdraft, or the loan will be at 4 or 5% rather than 3%. These are decision-making exercises which people should have access to an understanding of how the decision came about. For the simple reason, although there could be an alignment between what the provider and the individual want, the individual then has the opportunity to understand the reason why I was being given a higher interest rate on a loan is because the bank account I let the institution have a look at had less than £500 in it. If I put a few hundred pounds more in and show that I've got that money, this changes my risk profile. And understanding at that sort of forensic level, positive actions which individuals could take in order to improve their credit rating and their creditability, that's a useful thing to know. It's not often done. And I think if we go back to the days when banks were people and we built up personal relationships with bank managers and their associates, they would look at us in a holistic way. And even if the decision was negative, it would be done with some options as to maybe come back in a few months if you can do so-and-so, and then we'll talk again. And I think that depersonalization of personal banking is an area where scrutinized accountability could be brought in. And that would work well for both sides of the equation.
Yanis, you said something interesting earlier about political needs here, that ultimately those who are left behind may have to be looked after through some change in political process that forces the products of all this to be more evenly distributed. Would you like to say something about where you see that developing?
That's not only a algorithms and finance issue, it's broader. The tech industry produces very high salaries, people have very high productivity, these companies make fantastic amounts of money. For people who are not in this game, they kind of struggle to be part of this new workforce. So I think there has to be a great push to get more people into these skills, to give more people the ability to be part of this, to be a broader range from all kinds of different backgrounds to be part of this. And that's not only when you're young and when you're traditionally in education, but also when you're older, when maybe your job has been replaced by an algorithm, you should be able to then write algorithms because you got some education. So I think that's something that should be pushed more.
Okay, but Not everybody is capable of becoming a programmer or a data scientist, etc.
I fundamentally don't believe that you're born with being able to be a programmer or not being able to be a programmer. I have no formal education in computer science, and I think I'm a decent programmer.
Right, but when you're put out of work at 40 because an algorithm's taken your job in the bank and you haven't done any maths or any other technical work since school, you're not going to become the kind of programmer who's going to be able to deliver a profit to a company, right?
The late Obama administration tackled this topic. They put out this really interesting White House report on what the United States should do in face of all these algorithms and taking people's jobs and all that kind of thing. And they basically came to the conclusion that you can do two things. You can stump up more welfare. You can just, you know, everybody who got displaced gets some money and then can watch TV. Or you can try to get people back into the labor force. And they came to the conclusion that getting people back into the labor force is the better idea. So I kind of follow that conclusion. I think that's the way to go.
But some might dispute whether getting them back into the labor force is best done by giving them techie jobs. Maybe there are lots of other useful jobs that could be done.
Well, maybe we could use all that excess productivity to do something else.
Like looking after older people or sick people or whatever. Yeah. Okay. That's all been extremely interesting. Just to round off, can I ask you just to say a sentence or two on your hopes or fears for the future? Just briefly, some sort of predictions?
Well, I mean, my hope, as I said earlier, is that this technology will be used to reduce uncertainty, to reduce asymmetry of information, and so to make finance available more to more people at better conditions and making it more dynamic, to engage people more with the financial decisions around already in a young age. I hope that they'll start thinking about that, or that they'll have tools and apps that will help them to do with that. I'm not completely naive. I understand the risks here, and I think we've touched on them, the idea of really not creating this society that if you don't understand quants, you are hopeless, and the importance of regulation around understanding these processes. But overall, I think it's been a good thing. The last few years have been good. It's been good for Britain, the sort of creation of all this fintech and AI, mostly around London and the city, and I hope it will continue.
Yeah, I think we're at a point where we have a real opportunity to make the financial industry more efficient, more fair, more transparent, and more accessible for a lot of people. Like in any transition, there's a lot of kind of cliffs and rocks which we have to circumvent. But if we get it right, we can make it really nice.
I would echo Yanis's comments. If we get this right, we can have a financial sector which is wealthy, productive, is helping at national and global scale, but is one that is accountable, fair, and we understand the risks associated with the trading that takes place. So we have more of an understanding of how to avoid catastrophic global downturns, which I would argue have done more to damage people's job prospects than any AI algorithm. The big crashes of 07, 08, the after ripples are still affecting jobs and employment right now. So let's use these techniques to avoid these catastrophic changes in global markets, and we would avoid the big excess problems of financial downturns.
Many thanks to Steve Roberts, Nir Vulcan, and Yanis Klaas for an extremely interesting and thought-provoking discussion in our latest episode of Future Makers. And thank you for joining us. If you've got any questions or suggested topics for us, please do get in touch on Twitter at Uni of Oxford, all one word. And if you've enjoyed this episode, we would be very grateful for a review on the podcast app of your choice. Next time we're here, we'll be discussing whether AI is good for our health. So make sure you join us then. I'm Peter Milliken, and you've been listening to Future Makers.